Over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
Why should I care about the whale shark? I would say, seriously, just get on YouTube and you'll...
What can they teach us?
Whale sharks can live up to 100 years old.
That's what I read, yeah, 60 to 100.
Many species are in crisis and need your help.
It is estimated 73 million sharks are killed each year for just their fins.
That's it. So silly.
Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
Welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angie.
Hello, Angie.
Hi, Chris. You sound pumped up.
It was before we got going today, I was just really thinking about it. I wish, if there's anybody that's rich out there wants to pay for us to do this, I think Angie and I would do a species a day. Like,
yes.
It is so fun.
It is fun.
It is so fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like doing my homework this week, reading up today's whale sharks, which is really exciting.
Yes, very exciting.
And I just was like, God, I wish I could just do this every day. I wish I could just talk about a new species, go learn everything I can about them, and then share that knowledge.
There's so much to learn, and I, you can appreciate this. I, or probably any procrastinator out there, besides the fact that they're just so cool, they're the largest fish on the planet, so we'll talk a little bit more about that, but that's pretty fun, a fun fact. Mm-hmm. But every time I would go do some research about them, I would just find myself watching videos of them. And it became my zen relaxation for this week with all in the evening when I'm winding down from all the busy work throughout the day. And they're just so beautiful and magnificent and humongous that I just couldn't stop watching videos. And you and I were actually, truth be told to our listeners out there, we were supposed to podcast a day or two ago. And I had to let Chris know that I wasn't ready because I hadn't done all my homework. I was too busy watching the videos of these things during my allocated homework time.
Yeah. You watch them and they're just so elegant. That's just the word that came to mind.
Yeah. And for the listeners who do like to go onto YouTube and just type in whale shark, and there's some very educational and informative quick videos, and then there's just some beautiful footage of divers with them, and I would just, this one's only 5 minutes long, so I'd watch that one, and then the next one's only 10 minutes long. Yeah. So anyways, it's a very exciting, but I did do my homework, and hopefully I'll be able to inform the listeners about why else they should care and love whale shark.
Yeah, they're amazing. I was going to say, outside of Asia, the only place they are in captivity is the Atlanta Aquarium. Mm-hmm. And I saw them last November for the first time when I was visiting my sister up there when I was still living in Florida. Have you ever had a chance to see them?
I have, yes. It's been a few years now, but it was really striking. And if anybody has a chance and hasn't been to the Georgia Aquarium, you should go. It's top-notch, modern, just amazing vantage points, really well done, cool species you've never even heard of or seen before, and you get to be semi up close and watch a whale shark
swim over your head. Yeah, swim right over your head in that tunnel. Yeah, it was a really fun day with my sister doing some good stuff there. Anyways,
hey Melissa, we love you. you are one of our number one fans.
for sure. Whale sharks. They are now sadly classified as endangered, and we'll get into why with that. But stay tuned, because even though these guys live pretty long, if you want to hear what the longest living animal on Earth is, stay tuned towards the end of the podcast, and Angie and I will pop your brains with knowledge about some incredible species of animals.
Cool. There.
Now, I know there's trees that are like 10,000 years old, which are crazy, but you'll see. It will blow you away. It will blow you away. So, whale shark, what do they look like? And as Angie said, largest fish in the world. And so people, even as a kid, you hear whale shark, you think, oh, it's a whale, right? And it's not a whale. It's a fish. It's a large fish. It's, right. Largest fish in the world. So whales, porpoises, dolphins, or mammals, a whale shark is a fish. Now, I'm not going to go over this too much, but my three-year-old, and I know your kids too, with Finding Dory, that it's been very popular lately in the last couple of years. Destiny from that movie is a whale shark.
Oh, Destiny. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, we always like to say, it's your destiny, Destiny. The beluga whale. So, yeah, my three-year-old, when he was two, we watched that thing about three times a day for a month. But it kept him quiet, so that was a good thing. So they are beautiful. Just to describe them, they have, like, I would say mottled gray skin with pale white-yellow dots.
Yeah, well, the white to yellowish spots. Yeah, they're between, like, palish horizontal and vertical stripes that are subtle, too.
Yeah.
So, yes. They're just gorgeous. Distinct coloration. And their size being as big as a bus, or as long as a bus, I should say, is what they can reach. You can't miss them. And then they stand out when you do see them. And they're just gliding through the water. And they're gentle giants is how they're described. Their size, of course, is intimidating, but they're very harmless and they're docile. They're not what we think of sharks. Of course, a lot of people have the shark phobia, which you really shouldn't, because more people get injured from, I think, cows a year than sharks, for sure.
Yeah.
I always thought that was a funny
fact. Beastings.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Beastings, yep.
But we do. We can't help it. It's unfortunately a stereotype in our culture of, like, sharks bite and are scary. But since these are filter feeders, which we'll touch more on nutrition, and they have some really cool adaptations about how they do that. Mm-hmm. But because of that, they just glide along, feeding on plankton and small fish and krill, and have no interest in trying to
swallow us.
Exactly. So that just, to me, is makes them even more endearing.
Right. They're really striking animal. Mm-hmm. They have these really square heads. It's just, you look at it, it's really wide. It's a good blockhead is a good way to talk them. Blockheads.
A roundish blockhead, but they're not like hammerheads or anything, but they have almost like an octagon, but I know exactly what you're saying. It is. It's very big. Well, they can open their mouth like 5 feet or something crazy.
Yes, almost 5 feet. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they have that. They have two pectoral fins, like any fish, or even whales and dolphins have that. Now their caudal fin goes up and down, where a whale or a porpoise or dolphin have flukes that are flat. Right. So when people think, what's the difference between whales and sharks? That's really a big one is that. And then obviously they breathe through gills, which we talked about in Vampire Squid about how that works. So people want to learn about how that helps them breathe. Whereas, say, a whale is going to breathe through their blowholes, right? They actually need air, or they breach and suck in air. Now, some of the things I saw out there was claiming they could be as big as 60 feet. The largest I think they've ever found that's scientifically measured has been one that's roughly 22 tons or 44,000 pounds. Convert that to metric, that's about 20,000 kilograms. So that is huge. Mm-hmm. And then it was as long as about 42 feet or 12.7 meters. Mm-hmm. So like a four-story house. Well, I don't know who lives in a four-story house. Four-story building. Yeah, not me. They don't exist in New Zealand. But huge. Like you said, a bus. I mean, they are big, big creatures. Now, to give you an idea of other size sharks, the great white, on average, the biggest get about 23 to 25 feet, right? Some people claim, we've seen 30 footers. No, I think the record is about just over 23 foot that's ever been caught or landed. The basking shark is actually bigger than that, and this is another filter feeder, and that one's about 33 feet. Do you know, I found the smallest shark on Earth, not the biggest, the smallest.
Oh, I don't know that, Chris. What is that?
Do you know how big it is? If you had to guess how big the smallest shark on Earth is?
Oh, 1 foot.
Half, 6 inches.
Oh, that's tiny. tiny.
The dwarf
That's
lantern
my kind
shark.
Of shark.
Yeah, the dwarf Aww. Lantern shark. Yeah, little six
How
inches.
How cute is that?
Aww. They're little tiny ones. Yeah, little baby babies. Now, the whale shark is more warm temperate oceans, tropical. All right, so we mm-hmm. find them mm-hmm. in the tropical zones all over the planet.
And in general, they say that there's two major subpopulations mm-hmm. that exist. One in the Atlantic area over here by me, mm-hmm. and then one in the Indo-Pacific area, more closer to where you're at in New Zealand.
I know. It's crazy. Yeah.
They like the warm oceans across the world, mm-hmm. and they have mm-hmm. What's considered basically a circumtropical distribution.
Right. Right.
But Chris, this is, I don't know. We've covered a few animals now and are in our old notches on our belt. Right. But this one really got me thinking, and I don't know if it's because I pulled up some maps of their distributions of where they've been sighted mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. caught. But I think this might be the first species that we covered, besides even more so than polar bears, that really is across the world.
Right.
Which is what we'll touch on a little bit in their conservation of why the efforts to conserve it are, there's pros and cons to it, because it is mm-hmm. found in lots of different places, but mm-hmm. it takes a lot of international effort and collaborations and people working across the aisles to help these species where they're mm-hmm. where they don't have, where they're, they migrate and they move so right. far and they're found all over. And I don't know why, maybe I'm just a little more reflective now that we've done some more of these podcasts and thinking about how right. all this stuff relates, but they're found all over, which is once again, pros and cons of that.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, since we started doing this last year, I just, my whole perspective on conservation, where we are in the world, what we need to do, what we need to get done has changed since we started the podcast.
Oh,
so yeah, it's
oh, Chris, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In a good way. But once again, as every researcher, the more things I learn or the more questions I get answered, the more questions I feel like I have.
Right.
Which is why
you open one box. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Pandora's box. Yeah,
totally.
Which is why I feel like we've been really blessed to have some of these specialists, the side interviews of, people mm-hmm. working out in the field, fighting the good fight every day, doing conservation. So who right. knows? Hopefully we'll maybe be able to get a whale shark specialist on here to talk about some of the efforts. If you're out there,
yeah,
let us know.
Yeah, please contact us. Mm-hmm. we were always lining up those interviews. And you're right. It has given me a lot of hope mm-hmm. talking to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Where it's given me, I realize every species we cover, there's people behind them fighting to save them. So, you know, instead of just like, oh yeah, look at this poor species, oh well, there's actually a whole effort to save that one species.
Sure. And if you, yeah, crazy. And if you That's are great. If you are just tuning into the podcast and you're wondering, well, why should I care about the whale shark, I would say, seriously, just get on YouTube and you'll probably be mesmerized for days, like I was mm-hmm. watching all the videos of the cool things they do and them just gliding through the water, gentle giants, so pretty. So, yeah, but...
Yeah, they are. They really are. So here's a new term for me.
Ooh.
Pelagic. Do you know what that means?
Well, Chris, I read it and I'm okay. Well, I read it, but I'm a speed reader a lot because I've got a lot of stuff yeah. to get through lately. So I just thought it meant ocean. I didn't really dive too deep into what it meant.
Yeah. No. Oh, okay. That's good. Yeah. 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 All right. So it's P-E-L-A-G-I-C, and it means the animal lives in the open ocean. So not coastal or reefs, but these guys, or the whale sharks, are pelagic species, meaning they generally live out in the open ocean, but they do come in to lagoons and the coasts and harbors and things like that. They will. What's another amazing thing about their habitat is they do migrate. And I know towards the end, especially when we get to conservation, we're going to talk a little bit more about this, but there are some tourist hotspots. One of them is on the central west coast of Australia with the Indo-Pacific whale sharks, and it's Nigaloo Reef. And that's been a really big tourist hotspot of people swimming with these animals. Now, there's still a lot of tracking studies. If you go and we look up the scientific articles on the on them, doing a lot of good work. There's a lot of good, even some of the videos, I watched a couple too, because you're right, it is mesmerizing. Some of the people out in the open ocean, one of them I saw was off Gutter in the Arabian mm-hmm. Gulf. They were tracking them and doing DNA studies and things like that. So, you know, some of those Middle Eastern countries were looking to protect them, which was really, really great to see and hear.
And researchers that have tagged or tethered whale sharks and use satellite tracking to measure their movement think on average they have a daily movement of anywhere from 24 to 28 kilometers.
Oh, wow. I didn't, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so they're going places mm-hmm. and they are what is considered a fully migratory species. So mm-hmm. they cover a lot of ground, which is one of the reasons why it's hard to do population counts on them and also to learn about them.
Right, right. Yeah. And it's like, you know, the shark trackers now that you can get the apps and watch. I know you were just telling me about the great white that's off Florida.
Yeah. Mary.
Mary. Well, yeah.
I mean, not just Florida. That girl goes Florida, New England. She's not a girl.
Yeah.
New York. What? Yeah.
What are you saying, Angie? Do we need to? anyways, yeah. So they migrate a lot, not for the hotties, Angie, or yeah. I know your husband's from up there in the New England area.
Yeah, well, but I was thinking more of the yummy seafood they have in Boston, okay, but yes.
Good. That is great, because that is why they migrate, Angie. That is awesome.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, you are my kind of girl, right?
Yes.
So they go.
I'm a mom. What can I say?
Yes. Yes, you are.
Who so, loves to eat food. Yummy food.
Yeah, we all do. They go where there's blooms of plankton or other things. And this was the coolest. Again, another reason why I love talking about this, called seasonal food pulses. I've never thought of it that way. That is like, sure. I wish in my academic career, past life, that I would have known that word, because every time I talk about reproduction, I talk about spring, right? In the spring, new growth. You have everything is hatching or babies are being born generally because you have this food pulse.
Of course. So that's I love it.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, if I had a rock band, I think I would call it Food Pulse. I like that. It combines food and like music or rhythm, which are some of my favorite things. And so
I know. You need to do like music with the animals, and I'm going to do the male mating behaviors to attract hotties.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Know. And then we'll have the best video in the world, right? The best rock video.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Angie already talked about why it's important to conserve them, but it's also just the health of our oceans, which any aquatic species we've covered, we've, I don't want to beat it in your head, but just today, this morning, I'm reading the news, and now they estimate that garbage patch in the Pacific is about twice the size of Texas. Mm. When I first heard of it a few years ago, they said it was about the size of Texas. They estimate it's twice the size of Texas, which is insane. That's insane.
Crazy big. I can't it kind of makes me a little sick to my stomach, to be honest.
Texas is huge.
Yeah.
Well, I did my PhD there. It's like it took you 2 days to drive across the mm-hmm. state.
No, I know. That's
it's insane. Oh, yeah. Oh, anyways. Okay. We'll keep this upbeat.
Yes.
Now, my favorite part, the evolution.
Oh, wow. Wake me up when it's over.
In all honesty, Angie, this would take like 5 hours to talk about shark evolution. So I got it down to one slide.
Okay. I can okay. I can bear with you for one slide. Yes. It is so
convoluted, complex, and long. These sharks have done really well.
Well, they're basically swimming dinosaurs, right?
Yes. They date back.
I know that much. Mm-hmm.
So they date back at least 245 million years. They've survived.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Three mass extinctions. May not survive the six. That's what's scary. You know, they've survived a lot of things that nature's thrown at them. Maybe the ones in the super depths, who knows. But they have adapted. There's a lot of crazy different looking sharks. The whale sharks, not a lot known, because again, that's kind of hard to study. I think we covered it with like vampire squid and some of these other aquatic species that don't first of all, they're in the oceans.
Open so we ocean. Don't,
yeah, so getting, you know, their bones and things like that, it's really, really hard. So it'd be cool to talk to one of the scientists and say, how do you really figure this stuff out, you know? But the whale shark's scientific name is Rhynchodon typus.
I love it.
And, mm-hmm. yeah, and they belong to the subclass of sharks, rays, skates, and sawfish. So does anybody know what a skate is? Raise your hand. I don't know. Anybody know
my hand's is? Being raised, but okay. I'm an animal dork.
Yeah. So have you seen skates before? I haven't.
I have not, no.
Yeah. So it's a type of ray, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a ray fish. Right. Now, the whale shark is only one of three filter-feeding sharks. So the basking and megamouth sharks are the others. And again, they're really ancient animal. Don't know a lot about specifically how they evolved, but like Angie said earlier, there's the two subpopulations. You have the Atlantic, and then the Indo-Pacific. And the only thing that I found really kind of interesting was the reason these are two separate populations, and it made sense when I started really thinking about it, was about 3 million years ago, the oceans dropped. Okay, so when the cooling of the earth wasn't so hot, and then the Isthmus of Panama kind of came out.
Okay.
And so you had this separation between the Pacific and Atlantic. Mm-hmm. So that stopped all movement of tropical fishes.
Right, down that equator line.
Right, mm-hmm. because South America and Africa, and I never thought of this before. I was like, oh yeah, it makes total sense. They act as buffers. I mean, you have North America and Asia, obviously, but south of the equator, South America and Africa prevent tropical fish from migrating around. So I thought that was kind of really cool because the water's off the capes of both continents. It's just too cold for them.
Right. Yeah. Very interesting.
Now I know I'm not going to go over this, but most people know what the largest shark ever recorded in history, geological record.
I mean, I do because there's one at my local museum.
Yes. Megalodon, right?
Mm-hmm. Megalodon.
We'll save that for the great whites when we cover them. But they were about 60 feet, 18 meters. Thankfully, died out about 2.6 million years ago because they could swallow me, Angie, and 10 other people easily in one bite.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my four-year-old likes to go. We go shark teeth hunting in the local streams here in Gainesville. And we have not found a megalodon tooth, although in some of the rivers near the bigger river systems nearby, I believe that they have. But we find little tiny teeth. So that's kind of our fun, one of our fun little hobbies that we do. My son's really into fossils and bones.
Again, he stands no chance. He stands no chance. That kid is going to be animal crazy. Well, he knows so much about platypus, right?
Oh, he was telling me he wanted to be part of this podcast because he knows a lot about whale sharks, too. So I think we might have to start our own little side mini-series, Xander creatures or something.
That would be awesome because he was hilarious. If you haven't listened to Platypus, go listen to the first 5 minutes. It's well worth it.
And Chris, since we're on the subject of teeth, reading about these whale sharks, I just presumed that they are filter feeders, and we'll talk a little bit more about the really cool mm-hmm. technique that they do to basically strain plankton and small fish and krill out of the water mm-hmm. that they engulf. So I just assumed they didn't have teeth. But once I started researching them, lo and behold, not only do these whale sharks mm-hmm. have teeth, mm-hmm. Chris, but they have 300 rows in each jaw.
Shark teeth are just crazy. They're crazy.
Isn't that crazy? So potentially when I am shark teeth hunting here in locally in my community here in Florida in Gainesville, we might be finding whale shark teeth because even though they don't need them, they have them for the most part. So
it's a crazy adaptation.
It really is. And so what came first, the chicken or the egg? Did whale sharks come before sharks that need their teeth that mm-hmm. were very carnivorous mm-hmm. for tearing, or did they start? I don't know. The whole it's filter just so feeding, crazy
yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
So, and along with the teeth, they also have what's called dermal denticles,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that's basically just described as a tooth-like scale structure.
Yeah, Angie, looking at those, it's cool. And I'll put this in the show notes because I actually have a picture from a scientific paper that I was looking up about those. And yeah, they're like little hooks, really sharp, you know, and that really helps them catch the krill and hold it.
Kind of trap the food as it's
right. Yeah, as part of their feeding strategy. The teeth is amazing. Whale sharks can live up to 100 years old.
That's what I read. Yeah, 60 to 100. And we really don't know, but that's what
estimated. We don't know. Now let me ask you this, oldest in captivity. What do you think?
Ooh, 50 years?
No, 18.
Oh.
But
oh, I was way off.
It's still living.
Oh, okay.
So it's still living. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
All right, Chris, let's put our money down and you and I will talk. Yeah. 40 years from now, that's really bad math. It's not quite 40. It'd be like 30-something.
Yeah.
and then we'll see. We'll see if I'm right or not.
It's still there. It's in Japan. Mm-hmm. And that's because they didn't just have aquariums for these guys. You know, it took a while to develop ways to properly maintain them in a proper environment.
Yeah, I imagine they need a lot of space and they're specialty feeders. Right. It's not typically an easy thing to make it.
So you really got to be, you just can't throw them in a tank and say, oh, good luck. No, I mean, it takes a lot since they're so big. So that one's still doing well in Japan. Now, like Angie said, the mouths are about 5 feet across or 1.5 meters. They have five pairs of gills on each side, really small eyes. So going back to Dory, Destiny in the movie has really poor eyesight. She can't see really without Dory. And that's true. They can't really see that well.
They don't really need to see. So there's that. Yeah. There's that.
Yeah. Destiny doesn't need to navigate in the open ocean that much. Right. Yeah. And their eye is about the size of a golf ball. So for a 40-foot animal, it's really not that big.
No, for that span, 5 foot span. But now, Chris, their nose is pretty well developed, though, right?
Yes.
Makes sense because they need to be able to sense different patches of the plankton or the krill or what they're eating with olfactory cues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the sensing for that. It's really, again, I support you in watching videos after you wrote done with your dissertation, which you're almost there. You're almost there, Ange. You're almost there. And I know this is the...
It's the final countdown.
No, it's the worst part.
Ding-a-ding-ding. I had to remind myself that last night at 1 a.m.
Yeah. it's almost there.
How many more nights is this
going to last? It sucks. But it's worth it. It's worth it. Okay.
I hope so.
Yeah. So, talking about their senses and those videos, you watch those videos and watch them feed. So, you think of a basking shark, you know, they open their mouths really wide and just go. And they catch, you know, like a baleen whale. They go and catch and then squeeze the water out and swallow. The whale shark is doing suction feeding. And so, what's really cool in those videos, after I read this and I really watched the videos paying attention, you could see it. They open up their mouths really wide. That sucks in the water. And then they close it. So that's how they catch their food. It's not just them going through the water with their mouths open. They actually will move it and then move their head side to side. You know, so when you watch those videos, it's really cool. So when they do that, they filter about 1,500 gallons an hour. Or 5,600 liters
that
of water.
Fun fact. That's incredible, Chris.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, yeah, again, we talked about the small marine life that they eat.
Yeah, well, what they're doing too, right, the water then, when they close their mouth, they compress the water. I don't know if that's the right word, but then it goes out of their gills, and it's these dermal denticles, a pad-like structure that's near their gill plate that pretty much only lets water through. I'm like, man, that should be the invention for the next water filter or something.
Yeah.
Get all the crud out of like stream water or whatnot.
Right.
But really, it's like a very fine sieve. If you're familiar with what a sieve is in apparatus, and it's a really unique modification of like these gill rakes.
Yeah.
And nothing.
Yeah, it's really cool stuff.
Nothing but fluid gets passed, and so it can retain organisms above 2 to 3 millimeters in diameter. So mm-hmm. that's very small, and, mm-hmm. and therefore that's the different plankton and krill and other small fish that they're eating.
Yeah, that's incredibly small. So you think about, wow, the force. I'm just imagining them eating. You know, so they suck in all this water, close their mouths, and compress that sieve. How strong that's got to be. Mm-hmm. How much muscle's behind that,
yeah.
Right?
And now, when I get to the behavior section, I was fairly disappointed because there's really not a lot out there as far mm-hmm. as the behaviors they do. But they have been observed doing what's like a coughing motion. Mm-hmm. And researchers mm-hmm. think that this is a sort of mechanism to help clear or flush the gill rakers or the sieve when mm-hmm. food particles or things get caught in it.
Right, right. And they kind of, and they shake their head side to side, right? Like, and it was watching the one, I think it was a National Geographic, the off gutter, they were working with fishermen because the fishermen actually depend on whale sharks to find schools of tuna or mackerel, and they Correct. Use them. And the fishermen actually, from what the documentary was saying, if they're not particularly fishing for whale shark, they like the whale sharks because they're showing them where all the schools are.
Sure.
So they want mm-hmm. them around. They want to save them. They want the whale sharks in the water. So help them catch the smaller fish. That's what they're really after, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And again, like you said, jumping into behavior, very docile. I know you said that in the beginning. People do swim with them. We're going to get into a little bit of the ecotourism with them. But, you know, again, if you ever have the chance, you know, please support them, support the local communities, but don't ever touch them. Don't harass them. Let them do their thing. It's almost like the thing we go back into, I don't remember which pod it was, we talked about swimming with the manatees in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people do that, and they pay a lot of money to do that, and it's great. It helps the local community. But don't ever touch them or harass them. You know, just observe.
Well, Chris, I've really been thinking a lot about this, especially with the whale sharks and seeing some of the ecotourism operations that are mm-hmm. around. And I think with all wildlife, wherever you're viewing it, whether you're viewing a squirrel on your sidewalk or you're at Yellowstone Park, I mean, I think you just need to always be a respectful tourist or ecotourism,
right.
and not only when you're viewing animals, but when you're in nature, you know, leave no trace, mm-hmm. leave no garbage behind, leave no footprint, mm-hmm. be respectful. Mm-hmm. And yes, if you are going on a tour where you get to do something really cool, like swim with manatees, I've been lucky enough to do that. I mm-hmm. actually was able to snorkel, with manta rays, in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. So, but you want to, but do your homework. Make sure that you're going with a very well-certified operation, that they're respectful of the wildlife, that they're licensed. And mm-hmm. then, of course, all the good tours are going to teach you how to be a good tourist and what rules to follow. And my husband always teases me, I don't really love rules. I don't always love following rules. It's funny.
Really? I didn't know that about you at all.
I must admit, we've been married long enough now where we're almost like switching roles, where he's like breaking rules, and uh-huh. I'm kind of like, ooh, what a bad boy. and I'm more the one like, we can't do that. And so it's just so funny. We've like rubbed off on each other, because before when I met him, it was like, oh, rule? Like, let's break it. That's what it's for.
That's what it's for. And with kids.
But with that being said, this is the not in the time, this is the time in your life when you are working out in nature with wildlife, or especially if you're doing some of these unique touring right. operations, to not break the rules right. and to be respectful of the animals and not exploit them.
See, that's a great point. Just don't break the rules like Angie does. Don't be Angie in the wild,
no,
please.
No, in the wild, Chris. I'm very good behavior. I contain myself and I follow the rules. And I think it's...
I imagine you are there.
Well, yeah. It comes with age, too. I'm a little more safer than I probably used to be. Kind of.
I see. I know who you associate with, Angie. No, just kidding. You know, and I think it's a good point. you know, it's again a big conservation message. But really quick on the repro, before we jump into conservation, did you want to jump in about, you know, generation interval? What do we know? Because it's, again, we don't know a lot about them.
Well, in regards to reproduction, we don't know very much. But researchers do think that males and females are probably considered to be mature or reproductively active at about 17 years old for males and maybe 19 to 22 years for females of the Indo-Pacific. Of the Indo-Pacific whale shark.
Yeah, that's really long.
Yes, it's very, very long, which is...
Wow, that's crazy. I did not expect that.
No, I know. Their generation interval is generalized as 25 years, which is...
Yeah, it's a human.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they live to be, like we had mentioned before, their longevity is between 60 and 100 years, also very similar to human. And so now female whale shark ecology is... really poorly known. So, in fact, Chris, this is incredible. This is 2018, okay? And I think whale sharks, we've known about them as far as in the Western world for over 100 years. And I would have to look at my notes, but so we've known about these guys for 100 years. And are you ready for this one, Chris?
Yeah.
We don't know where they give birth. We don't know much about how they give birth. We've never seen them give birth. In fact, the whole mating, there's no breeding behaviors that we know about. We know they get in these aggregations in different areas, like you'd mentioned earlier in the podcast, but researchers don't necessarily know if it's for feeding or breeding, or they speculate perhaps it's for giving birth. And so... they're very, very, they're sneaky and they're very private. In these areas where these whale sharks are often regularly sighted, they never have re-sightings, or those are rare. So a pregnant shark is maybe observed in location A, and then, you know, she's never observed there again. So I can't believe it's 2018 and we know very little. The one little tidbit of knowledge that we do know that's pretty much cited like in every paper, this author gets like a ton of credit, bless his heart. Lucky guy. But interestingly enough, in 1995, a single pregnant female was either caught or something happened and from Taiwan. And upon necropsy, it was found that she had 304 pups.
Wow.
Inside of her. And what that helped establish, because there was great debate in the community, if whale sharks gave what is considered like live birth. So they grow...
live birth, yeah.
Mm-hmm, they grow in eggs inside the animal, and then they're born live. Or if the other way to do it is that the female will expel an egg case, and then the animal will hatch on the seafloor when it's ready. So the other really, really cool thing about this one study is, or this one animal, Chris, in the two, you know, in hundreds of years, of the 304 pups in the whale shark, they were in various stages of development, which is very interesting. So that they weren't all the same.
So they weren't all the same. Yeah.
Correct. So super bizarre. And researchers speculate that what is seen in some of the other sharks is the females can store sperm. And what they might do then is, as they're cycling and they're releasing eggs, then they'll release some of the sperm, and then that'll fertilize one batch. And then that batch will be growing, and then through the next cycle, or... you know, maybe it's dependent on food or seasonality, or they don't, you know, they really don't know. But it's...
right, so it's almost like reptiles that store sperm for years.
And they did some DNA tests on these pups, and they believe it was all from one male. But with this type of reproduction technique, there's always a chance, too, that there could be multiple males. But nobody's seen him breed. Nobody's seen him give birth. Like, we just don't know. And to me, that's just... it's such a large species. And I mean, it just goes to show like how large the ocean is and how secretive these guys are. Mm-hmm. It just, mm-hmm. I mean, with all the technology we have, it's just really interesting. So I think since you're over there in that region, you should probably be, you should figure it out, and then you'll basically be cited on every paper about whale sharks. Yeah, reproduction for the
repro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just don't know. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I would say most scientists that work with aquatic species yell and scream. They're like, we don't know anything about the ocean.
Yeah,
we know nothing.
They do believe at this point in time, grant that could change next year, but at this point in time, they think it's the largest litter. You know, having the 304 pups, that represents a lot larger litter than other shark species. And they have observed what they call a neonate, or a baby whale mm-hmm. shark swimming that was only about 46 centimeters. They think that might be what size they're born at, but nobody knows. Mm-hmm. Or are they all born at once? Right. I mean, they just don't know, Chris. So for me, it's just so cool. Like, hey, all you kids out there, go be a whale shark researcher and find this stuff out.
Yeah, it would be awesome. It's there again, something we don't know a lot about. It would be cool when we do great white sharks, you know, in the next few months, whenever we get to that there's, I know, with the great interest because of mm-hmm. Jaws and all the stuff that's been going on, but you watch Shark Week, Discovery Channel, things like that, great white is like the major focus. So there's been a ton of money pouring into research for that. Probably not a ton. They would probably scream at me and say, Chris. Ha! There's like nobody. Yeah. But more so than this poor guy struggling to identify whale shark stuff, right?
Sure. Still not enough money.
No, never enough money. Never enough money. It's money sucks.
And Chris, here's the deal. These whale sharks need us now more than ever. They have recently been updated through the IUCN as endangered in 2016, mm-hmm. and their mm-hmm. population is decreasing. They believe there's been an mm-hmm. overall 63% in the Indo-Pacific whale shark in the last 75 years or three generations. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. there are nobody knows how many whale sharks are left because, as we've touched on already, the mm-hmm. rough estimates, but these are very hard species to count because of where they live and how they live and what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But they definitely know that there's been a huge decline in the past 75 years. And with this long life cycle, like we mentioned, not even maturing till you're in your 20, you know, in your 20s, that mm-hmm. even if they do give birth to 300 pups, sharks, I mean, not that many, they're not all going to make it, right? Because they're little and they're
not most of them won't.
Right. Yeah. And then it's going to take that one another 20 years to mature, to reproduce again. And then if there's less of them, it's probably harder for them to find each other. And then they have a lot of threats. And so I think that's one of the keys we should focus in with the whale sharks is that they do have some threats and mm-hmm. probably predominantly, it's going to be, they're often a product of bycatch. So they'll accidentally get caught in nets, like I mentioned in the video mm-hmm. that I watched. And the mm-hmm. nets aren't named, they're not aiming for them. They're just caught in it because they're following the school's fish around.
And I was saying, the conservation or the videos that you watch or some of these things that you read, the fishermen are just, the whale sharks cue them in onto where there's a school of fish. So they find the whale sharks, then they drop their nets, and some, I assume, don't care, you know.
Like, sure, sometimes they'll set the nets, they'll basically set the nets like around the whale sharks.
Yeah, and they don't care, yeah. Because mm-hmm. they'll catch them and harvest them for their meat, right? So.
Yes, I mean, that's there's definitely more conservation efforts being made in more countries to regulate that. And mm-hmm. to prevent that, but it does still happen, of course. I mean, you can't control.
Right.
Unfortunately, in the open waters, it's hard to police everything. And in mm-hmm. the same mm-hmm. instance, too, they've become, unfortunately, in the past 20 to 30 years, a victim of poaching, which stinks for them. Nobody cared mm-hmm. about whale sharks for a long, long, long time. But, of course, in the past 20 to 30 years, they've become their meat and their fins, right. And sometimes some of their byproducts are used as oil, means that they're being targeted mm-hmm. by poachers. And there's estimates that, you know, hundreds or thousands are killed each year for this reason, which it's not legal. Poaching right. is not legal, of course, but it's very hard to police.
Right.
And then another threat that they're under is collision with boats. And so they often mm-hmm. feed in these warm tropical waters, and they can be hit mm-hmm. by propellers, or and sometimes they even can sustain life threatening injuries. So it's with these biological characteristics, their large size, slow growth, late maturation, and extended longevity that make them very susceptible to overexploitations. And therefore it makes it, even if we started saving them all tomorrow, it still takes their populations a long time to rebound.
Right. And you were talking about the shark fin, and that was kind of, you know, a conservation tip. Again, plastic is the big one. If you want to do anything for the oceans, avoid plastic, as I look at a plastic bottle sitting on my desk, and it makes me feel really bad. So I've been doing my best.
You should feel bad. I have glass. No, I'm just teasing. No, don't feel. There's no need to plastic shame anybody.
No.
But no, I do. I have my same water glass, my mason jar that my husband teases me about that I use every day. Yeah. I don't even know if I don't think I wash it or whatever. Save water that way, and then I have my tea. Yeah. But it is it's a hard habit to kick. But you know, but you can recycle too.
We do. I mean, sure, obviously, if you, I couldn't imagine not recycling. It's just there's this thing called L&P down here. It's lemon and Perora. And it's like, the only thing you can get it in is plastic bottles. And it's like, I kind of like it. I support the local economy, and it's better than Coke. I don't know. Anyways, I still feel bad when I buy it.
Hard.
Yeah, it's still hard. So, you know, obviously that's a conservation tip that will hammer. But the other one is, Angie mentioned the shark finning and shark fin soup. Oh my God, please don't ever eat shark fin soup. Don't support that. It is being sold in the U.S. You can go to many restaurants.
Really?
Yes. It is estimated 73 million sharks are killed each year for just their fins.
That's so silly. It is ridiculous.
It's not sustainable. It's absolutely not sustainable. And what these fishermen do is they capture the sharks, they cut the fins off, and they throw the shark back in the ocean. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. And they turn around and make this soup that costs in U.S. $80 per pound. Okay. It's a delicacy. And please don't ever eat shark fin soup.
No, I know. And there's actually one or two reports of whale sharks that have their fins missing.
Yeah.
But they're doing okay. They're maybe, you know, only part of it was taken off. And they don't know for sure if it was part of this this ridiculousness. Catch, but still, it's obviously concerning. But it's a hard battle unfortunately, with this high demand and the cost. That's where if you vote with your dollar and you don't consume it and tell your friends not to consume it and that it's silly and ridiculous, that then we'll drive the prices down and then nobody will go after the shark. So, I didn't realize it was even that you could get it in the States. But.
Yeah, no, I did. And I was going to say, I read an article, a guy who wanted to see how easy it was, did find it in a Chinese restaurant, I think in San Francisco, and it was pretty pricey and said it tasted like nothing. Now, before we jump into our hook on what is the longest living animal on earth. Do you want to talk about some organizations you want to support?
Oh, Chris, yes, because once again, I had a lot of fun researching this. The whale shark is growing in popularity, so there's definitely a heavy handful of organizations doing wonderful things for whale sharks. But the first one I want to touch in is in my neck of the woods over here in north and south.
Angie, real quick. I love this part of the podcast. I hope people stick around and listen to this because you do such thorough research. But when I'm editing this, I just wanted to say this because I haven't been able to say this to you. God bless you for the research you do on these guys. And again, this is what makes doing this pod so exciting. The people doing God's work. So anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just was like, I got to say thank you to Angie. I mean, I do all the time anyways. I love my grad students and my friends.
But, oh, that's so sweet. I actually thought we were going off air for a second. I'm like, oh, is he answering the phone? I didn't know. But I'm like, what's going on here? Yeah. I was like in the conservation zone.
Yeah, I'm
like,
sorry. You know, I'm sorry. I know you get in that zone. But I just was like, because I know some people are like, oh, I don't need to listen to this. And I'm like, they need to listen to this because you do such a great job. And it's amazing. So go ahead. I'm sorry. I just wanted to say thank you.
Oh, you're too kind. And I hope people do listen to it because it gives me a lot of hope. And there's just a lot of good going on in the world and a lot of ways to support the, besides donations or whatever, there's lots of ways to support these groups and give them a shout out. And my first one is, closest to me. It's probably the closest I could get to if I needed to. It's the Whale Shark and Oceanic Research Center. And they can be found at www.wsorc.org. They're also on Facebook, so you could like them on Facebook, and then your feed would get blown up with awesome. Forget about the kitties. Mm-hmm. You get kitties and dogs. You'd get, in addition to that, then you'd get some really cool whale shark photos and videos. But what they do is they're located out of Honduras, and they're a nonprofit conservation organization, and they operate one of the few year-round whale shark monitoring and research centers in the world. So they're tracking these guys year-round, and they also have a dedicated team of scientific staff and volunteers that want to help not only obviously conserve and save the whale shark, but they also want to conserve the marine environment which these sharks live in, which is important because we can save all the species we want in the ocean. But like you said, Chris, if we don't do something about this two times the size of Texas trash pile in the ocean, there's not going to really be a happy home for them. So they do a lot with marine environments, and they're really, they do, they help educate and teach standard ethical operating procedures for a lot of the whale shark encounters, for a lot of the different tourist operations. So good job, Whale Shark and Oceanic Research Center. Check them out. I like them on Facebook, and I'm going to keep following them and all the good work that they do. And then my second organization is kind of the dream. This is over nearby you. And this is Is it Maldives or Maldives? How do you say that?
The Maldives. I believe it's Maldives.
Okay. So this is the Maldives Whale Shark Research Program. And they are out of the Maldives, which looks like my paradise.
I've seen hotel pictures. I'm like, oh, that would be so awesome.
I'm honey, it's our anniversary this weekend, you know? Can we just get there and, you know, get it halfway across the world and do this? But anyways, they can be found at www.maldiveswhalesharkresearch.org, and they have a very heavy Facebook presence too, and they're registered out of the UK, but they work in the Maldives, and they support whale research projects, and they do a lot of community conservation initiatives to help get the locals involved with one. Once again, you got to get the locals involved if you want to help protect the fishermen and the people that also use the ocean for other things. And they really just believe in community mobilization, but their main goal is they're like me. This is why this is like, I need to go work for these guys, is they want to discover more about the biology and ecology of whale sharks and why it's so secretive and what is happening. They want to learn more about behavior, so I could actually have something to talk about in that section.
And of course,
they want to preserve the habitat that they swim in the oceans, and they want to learn more about how tourism using science, how tourism is impacting these guys. Because obviously, like you said, it's not, you don't want to go grab a whale shark when you're doing a tourist thing with them. And so what is the safest approach to be near these gentle giants? So they've also, you'll like this, Chris, too. They also, for people in that area of the woods, they've implemented an online citizen science platform.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and it's got a great name. It's called Big Fish Network, which is perfect.
Look that up.
And that helps obtain records of whale and shark sightings from different tour operators and fishermen in the area. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah, check out the Maldives. Yeah. Is it Maldives? I got to get it.
Maldives.
Maldives. Yeah. Ah, clearly, I don't get a chance to go there if I don't know how to say it. But, yeah, check out the Maldives Whale Shark Research Program. Like them on Facebook. Your feed will thank Angie for in the morning when you're seeing pictures of these beautiful creatures in slow motion.
And, Angie, I bet you we're both wrong. I bet, who knows? I'm just calling it Maldives. Okay, so our hook. Yeah. So to answer your question, the longest living species. Okay, so the world record for the oldest person is 122 and a half years old.
Oh, I want to beat that. I want to break that record.
French woman, Jean Calment, who died in 1997. Now, Galapagos tortoises, 176 years old. Nice. Harriet died in Australia in 2006. She was believed to have been collected by Darwin.
What?
In 1835. Yeah, that's insane.
Awesome. Oh,
yeah,
man.
That was awesome. All right. I've heard this before. Bowhead whales, 211 years. I know they have seen a bowhead whale still with a harpoon in it from the 1800s.
That's incredible.
Like,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so now we're getting up there. Now, the Greenland shark is pretty ancient. For sharks, they can live to be about 400 years old.
What is going on? I mean, this is just the physiologist in me.
Yeah, the biology.
How is it? What are they doing? And can I get some of that? And why aren't we studying that and unlocking the code?
Yeah.
And I just wonder, too, like, what is the benefit of living that long? Or why did they evolve?
I don't know.
It's cool. It's awesome.
Yeah. All right. So now we're getting there. I got two to go. Icelandic clam, 507 years ago.
Wow.
There was a specimen.
How do they even know this?
I don't know. Carbon dating, I guess. So there was. I'm reading this. It says a specimen named Ming, after the dynasty in power at its birth, was accidentally killed by research scientists. Of course.
Jeez.
500-year-old clam. Put that in my linguine.
Yeah.
All right.
That guy.
Drum roll. The longest living species is immortal.
Tricky, sneaky, Chris.
The juvenile, or the jellyfish, Pteroptopsis dorni.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It can return from the adult stage to the juvenile and back again. It just keeps regenerating.
What? We need to cover this guy.
Yes. Yes, I think we will. And with that, thank you. Calls for us this week. Please follow us on Facebook.
You left us
follow
with like
us
the biggest,
on Twitter.
You left us with like the biggest hook. You didn't answer the hook, but anyways.
No, it is. It's the one that lives the longest.
I know,
the jellyfish.
But now I want to know more about it. So.
Oh wow! Okay. Next pod.
Yeah.
Let's do it. All right. Well, we will cover this species very soon. I promise you. So follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, please subscribe, rate, and review, but thank you for sticking with us. Another great episode with Angie, and again, it highlights our week. I know her and I are both busy being parents and stuff, but we love doing this, and just thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you, everyone. Happy whale shark watching. You'll thank me later.
Yep, bye-bye.
Listen, learn, share. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.